Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
Welcome to another episode of No One Fights Alone podcast. Two people have graced our presence today. We're missing Brad. We'll miss him in the conversation, but Danny Warner, CEO of Chateau, and Ben Pearson, clinical director. Thank you guys for coming on again. I know I forced you into this, but...
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. Glad to be here.
Thanks for invite.
Episode number 8 or 9 for you now?
Something like that.
Oh, I feel like we've just made you a regular.
Might be a host at some point.
You can take my hosting responsibilities any day you want. No, I thought it'd be a good... I mean, we've talked about this a bunch, and the reason that we want to talk about what we're going to today is... As we've worked with a lot of community members and departments and organizations, there is an extreme confusion in the space on different options for people when it comes to seeking some type of treatment. I think that people, not everyone fits in every level of care. Does that sound appropriate?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's tough when someone recognizes that I need some help to figure out, well, what level of help makes sense for me, where I'm at, what am I, not only what makes sense clinically, but also what am I willing to do right now?
Yeah, what can you do with job? And I mean, I was just talking to someone yesterday who they started their search on Google and they just hit a complete roadblock of understanding what's available, what options they have. And then, you know, when you call Google or when you call numbers from Google, he's like, I was being told it would be 100,000, 150,000, all of these different numbers. And they just went into a panic and couldn't make a decision. Right. And so, you know, clarifying what's out there, which I'll let you guys kind of go into that subject and talk about it. But Ben, I know that there's different levels of care, and talk about what those levels of care are and, you know, what qualifies you or what do you need to have going on in order to attend that level of care?
Sure.
Well, I can talk about a chunk of it. It's interesting. As I've mentioned before, you know, Brad and I do some trainings, and we do a training where we just talk about the big picture of mental health and kind of what's going on for people. And most people have a takeaway of, I got to do something. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not happy where I'm at. Usually people start to recognize there's some consequences of a mental health or sometimes a physical health issue that is just starting to overwhelm them, so they need to create some kind of intervention. And they just don't know where to start. So as we get into that, I think it's important to note that, you know, not all help is going to be professional. Not all help is going to be formal. And there are a lot of things that people can do nowadays between podcasts and books, hell, even YouTube. There's lots of things they can start to do to create some legitimate change in their lives. And I think that, you know, change itself is not a comfortable thing, but if we're talking about a larger systemic change, that's the kind of change that we've seen that really lasts. So I think that some folks are looking for some of those quick fixes. Most folks who get into this process have already tried quite a few, and now they need to do something a little bit more organized. And so that's a bit of what I think we're here to discuss, right?
Yeah.
When you've tried the little stuff and the little adjustments hasn't quite worked yet, what's the next level?
Yeah. And it, I mean, it involves everything from time commitment to intensity, you know, to cost. And Danny, I know that you opened up Chateau 12 years ago now.
Right? Yeah. 12
years. I mean, talk a little bit about why you chose residential, and then we can talk about the kind of the lower levels of care after that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we're thinking about kind of what is going to have the most kind of impact for somebody, I think for a lot of people, when they get to that point where they recognize that things are out of control, that something needs to give, and I need to I need to make a change. I think obviously the first step is usually trying to get an individual therapist and be able to have somebody to talk to and gain some different perspective. But for most, when they get to that point where my life is unmanageable, being able to completely remove yourself and go into a completely different environment, a residential setting where kind of all the variables are different, all the variables are managed, and you can really delve in and start to kind of do the heavy lifting, start to peel back the layers. I think that is kind of the catalyst for the most amount of change, especially if someone reaches that point, they've got to that point, and they said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. It feels to me that that is the best opportunity to be able to intervene and be able to have the most lasting change. Obviously, what happens after a residential experience, I think, is vitally important and probably the biggest indicator whether those changes are going to stick. But it is the opportunity where I felt that we could go create something that is going to have the greatest impact.
Well, it's also the most drastic.
The most drastic, for sure.
Like, I mean, you are living there, you're eating there, you're doing everything on site.
Yeah.
Right? And that's probably the most difficult thing for people to fathom, is being away from family, being away from everything. Right?
And like you're kind of hinting at, I think the extreme part of it is part of why it works. I think, to be honest, there's a lot of lower levels of interventions that people, to be honest, just don't take seriously, or they don't respect it. So usually if there's some pretty serious adjustments that are being made, folks, strangely enough, they deal with extremes a little bit better. They actually shift their priorities. They dedicate more time, more energy to crisis. Little small adjustments, people end up kind of talking themselves out of doing these small adjustments unless they really have a foundation, something pretty different.
Yeah, talk about a day, because that's what people are, especially when you drop down into something called partial hospitalization or PHP, which we'll go over a little bit later. Talk about what's kind of the daily schedule for somebody.
Yeah, well, part of what I love about residential treatment is the extreme. I got an extreme personality. When I want to make a shift, I make a really hard shift. And the great thing about residential treatment is we get to control all the variables, everything from helping you change your sleep patterns to start to wake up early, start to have some really healthy habits. We start the day with some meditation and some yoga. For many people, that's new and feels extreme, but it's a chance to be able to quiet the mind, to start to move the bodies, to start to get embodied and to be grounded. And then we move into super healthy breakfast. We get to control that piece, which I think is often overlooked, how we fuel our bodies. Food is medicine. And if we can help people recognize the relationship between what I put in my mouth to how I feel and how my mind works, we start to see some real big shifts. Then we move into some more intensive group settings where you get to process with a group of your peers. You get to have your ideas and your mind kind of pushed. You get to get challenged. And then throughout the day, there's individual sessions where you're able to go one-on-one with the therapist in various modalities. At Chateau, we offer some pretty intensive trauma modalities, EMDR, brain spotting, and ART, which is accelerated resolution therapy, and then be able to come out of those intensive individual sessions, again, in a supportive environment. We also encourage our clients to do what is called neural feedback every day, where you're also training your brain to operate at its optimal level. You're training your brain what it's doing is encouraging the right kind of brain patterns and discouraging those that aren't super helpful. And then from there, some more group, eating well again through your dinner, and then some support groups in the evening with your peers, and then doing some wrap up where you're able to connect with your peers, review the day, talk about what you accomplished, set some intentions for the next day, and then go get to bed early. and do it all again, all also with the right kind of supplementation, making sure that you're getting the amino acids and the nutrients that your brain needs to be operating at its optimal level. So as we start to control all those various variables, we start to really start to see some real impact and some real change. And we do it again, over and over again, as our clients start to recognize healthy patterns, have these opportunities to start peeling back the layers, being in an environment with other peers who are in that same process. They might be various varying levels of change in terms of their own motivation, but they get to process with their peers, get some input, get some feedback, and then do that day after day and really start to get at the core of what they're dealing with. I think that it's super impactful, and it allows them to get to a point that it's difficult to get to when you are in your daily life dealing with all the stressors and responsibilities and obligations that you got to deal with day to day. You get to really, really go deep.
So, Ben, I mean, talk a little bit about on the therapeutical side, whether it's individual sessions, group sessions. I mean, talk about when you're going to this extreme and you're separating from your home life. Do you find it to be easier as a therapist to accomplish more individual work and more group work and go deeper on issues?
Sure. Well, I want to note for a second that as folks consider, you know, what kind of help might I need? Where do I fit into this spectrum we're describing? This level of intensity and these kind of services are designed for those who are overwhelmed, who they don't have a lot of internal structure. They don't have a lot of discipline. Most folks that we end up seeing at a residential level are folks who are tired, exhausted, and there's lots of things in their lives. Usually it's relationships. Sometimes it's money. A lot of times it's about their work, their attitude or their ability to function at work. So the wheels are coming off in some of those areas, and they don't probably have a lot of other options. So when they get to that point, a lot of them are pretty relieved that someone's making decisions about food and about how to manage some of those small little details. Most folks are pretty discouraged, fairly disoriented, and they are kind of been in a hopeless spot for a while. So I think they are okay with someone in offering a little bit of organization, and they can pass off some of that decision-making temporarily to someone that says, this is healthy, do more of this, and let's practice it together as we develop some resilience and some competence. So, I think that it doesn't feel extreme for some of those that have been here for a little while, because they're like, I was never going to eventually gradually get myself over to this spot. Mm-hmm. I did need something like a larger reset, like Danny said, to just start being the healthy person that I want to be. And if I'm with other people and I don't have to manage my schedule and I'm not taking the kids to school and I don't have to do these other things, the reality is you just need some time and repetition to develop habits. And there's no way of doing that while being in the middle of 20 other crappy habits at home. So that's a tough thing. So as we talk about the therapeutic aspect of it, yeah, I think usually at a residential level, people are tackling some topics that have usually just been unavailable for a long time. And so as we discuss things like, you know, trauma-specific therapeutic modalities, trauma is a mind-body experience. And so there is a toll on our bodies and minds after we process and address some pretty heavy things. And you just got to give your body some space and some time and some opportunity to actually heal from that. So most folks, if they do outpatient counseling, they might do it, but they will be kind of wiped out for the rest of the evening or possibly the following day. So I see a lot of great folks who try to do a lower form of treatment, but they feel so guilty for not being able to juggle everything while they do the important work of healing. Something's got to give, and a lot of time it just ends up being the counseling. And so they just stop doing the most impactful, healthier stuff because they have so much guilt about not showing up in other areas of their life. And so they just need some permission to just allow these things to be a high priority and dedicate the energy to do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking when what you're saying is like, oh, too tired to go hang out with the kids.
Right.
When you get home or cook dinner or do whatever it is. Right. So you eliminate some of those barriers. So yeah,
bark at the kids and throw in a frozen meal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go back to your phone and just check out for the rest of the evening.
Yeah. Well, and Danny hit on something too that is a part of the therapeutical process, which is the culture and the community. I mean, what are you trying to build in a residential setting with that culture and that community and that alumni base?
Well, that's part of the reason that we've gotten pretty specific about kind of who we treat, and we make sure that when we bring somebody in, they're going to be a good fit to this group. We want to have a culture where they're supporting each other, they're challenging each other. There's a ton of research around the efficacy of a group setting where you are in a group with your peers who are going through that same process, who are having some of those same realizations, where you can support each other, challenge each other, and glean off each other's experience. And so being in an environment where you're with others who struggling with similar things that you're struggling with, that you can relate to, that you can support, is really helpful for your own recovery. And so we try hard to create a community where that is happening on a daily basis, where it's great because we operate off of a rolling admission cycle, meaning that we have people coming in all the time. So they might get thrown into a group with someone who's been there for 4 weeks, who've sat in that chair where they were when they're nervous and they're scared, and be able to offer some insight, be able to offer some empathy about where you're at, and be able to kind of offer some hope in terms of where you're able to get if you can stick with it. So that community setting, I think, is really helpful in terms of helping people progress a lot quicker.
No, I think that's a great point. I think being at home, some of the outpatient options that are out there, they do have a right. There's a right fit and there's a right time for that. But a lot of times family, especially if they've been tired and discouraged for a while, they ask a lot of, are you fixed yet? Are you better yet? And that is something that is not happening in a residential program, where there's not only that positive peer pressure to keep on doing healthy things, even though it's new and it's not quite your routine yet, but there are other folks that when you fail and struggle and you, heaven forbid, you be human again once in a while and get snippy or reactive or whatever things that humans do when they're a little overwhelmed, there's an environment of some compassion and some support, and it's not taken too personally. People can have a rough day in treatment, and we're all like, yeah, that makes sense. You're changing your whole life. You're upending all sorts of things. It makes sense that this is not going to be completely graceful. And you don't have that same kind of, not about patience, you just don't have that kind of permission when you're at home. The reality is it's just tough for those who are watching that process and they're not sure what to make of it.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's important to hit on that, you know, Chateau does it this way, but that is the design of residential, a lot of it, right?
Right.
Everyone has their different clinical approaches or physical approaches or diets or all of those type of things with whomever is in charge. But yeah. I mean, that's the goal, is to create that community, give the space that people need to separate and heal and kind of get every facet of their mind, body, and spirit on track.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Some do better than others, but they're all, generally speaking, that's kind of the approach.
Well, we're trying to create a foundation. And that's probably often a misunderstanding that people have about treatment. There are some that do chuckle later, but acknowledge that they were kind of hoping the program was going to identify all the issues, resolve all of them, put a bow on it, and when they go home, none of those behaviors or concerns are ever going to be seen again. We kind of joke about it around here because it's a pretty common conversation, but the reality is that's just not very realistic. Some people acknowledge they got family who are really hoping for some resolution in a real concise, organized package that is really easy to navigate and understand. But I think that expectation is something we try and deal with as early as we can. But if we're looking at the big picture of someone evolving, we're just trying to create a foundation of some realistic expectations, some new habits, a different mindset, and a roadmap to move through these kinds of changes as it becomes a lifestyle, as it becomes a routine that you really kind of lean on. That's really what we want to do. People that are hoping for this other thing, they are obviously disappointed. They're discouraged, and sometimes they end up just not engaging in treatment anymore,
yeah.
Which is rough because they end up kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So if we can help them and the families kind of understand this is the beginning of a lot of new things, then I think we end up seeing a lot of more buy-in, more engagement, and more problem-solving. But I think that's something that everyone comes to treatment with some different ideas. Unfortunately, there's a lot of folks who think what they've seen in movies in TV is what's going to be happening in treatment, and then they realize that the real change and the healing is not going to be like you saw in the movie. It's going to be in quieter, you know, different sort of scenarios.
Less romantic.
Yeah, it's not as dynamic. It's not as sexy. It's not as explosive. That some of the bravest moments that I get to see as a clinician are snot and tears and discouragement and even some hopelessness as people have a light or two turn on in their heads and realize, wow, why have I lived this long with this particular idea running the show? So those are quiet moments. And the good news of all of this is that if we kind of learn how we work and start to embrace it and accept those things about ourselves, the chances are really high that we can actually keep on repeating and learning from those patterns and recreate some real healthy lifestyles outside of this one building or this one treatment location.
One of my favorite parts about residential treatment is we get to have them full time. And so there's a lot of opportunities for them to be able to learn some new skills and tools and different types of interventions. And then lots of opportunities to put them into practice. You're in an environment with a bunch of people who you don't know. You know, there's some opportunities to have to learn how to navigate different relationships and different types of issues. But you get lots of chances to be able to put those tools and those skills into practice and then get some feedback and do it again. And so once you leave treatment, you've had dozens and dozens of opportunities to practice these different skills and these tools. You get exposed to lots of different types of support. Figure out what works for you. What do you resonate with? At the end of the day, there's not really kind of a one solution that's going to fit everyone. It's important for everyone to come and figure out, what do I resonate with? What do I connect with? And then what do I want to take with me after I leave here? And the only way you're going to do that is having the opportunity to practice it. And we give you lots of different opportunities to practice that in lots of different environments. Lots of different opportunities to fail as well as succeed. And that's what the benefit of being able to have somebody 24/7 for, you know, 30 plus days is by the time you leave there, you feel like, I can handle these different situations. I'm ready. This is not just in theory, but I have some practice now to be able to go to put into play once I leave.
And when you talk about the, you know, there's not a one size fits all, I think it's fair to say that this also, as we spoke earlier, isn't the route for everybody.
For sure.
Whether it's economic factors, family factors, whatever it may be. And a majority of these, we're calling them levels of care because I think that's what they're just classified in the on the back end of things. But these are all benefits that a majority of insurance companies carry, right? We're talking in a way of like, hey, I don't want to pay thousands and thousands of dollars. I pay into my insurance plan. This is what I want to use. Especially people listening to this that, you know, are employed by departments and organizations that supply that health insurance, these are all benefits that you can use. And so, you know, if residential treatment is not an option, there is something as close as you can get to it or that is offered. That's called PHP, right?
Yep.
Speak on that just a little bit, what it is, maybe the time commitment. We spoke on residential, so I think people will be able to infer kind of what those differences are. But talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, PHP stands for partial hospitalization, or kind of a better way to describe it is day treatment, where somebody lives at home and or lives not where the treatment is provided and comes to treatment for a certain number of hours per day and per week. Typically, what that qualifies as is 20 hours a week. So somebody might be going to a clinic where they're getting 5 hours of treatment 4 times a week, or it could be more than that. They do some intensive treatment, and then they go back home and are able to kind of continue on with their life. And there's some real benefits in that. One is you get a chance to go home each night and be able to put those into practice. It allows you to be able to maintain some commitments and some obligations while you're still in treatment. The only downside of it is if you're not at a spot where you are able to handle some outside obligations, some outside stressors, some outside temptation, where you haven't got a spot where you got some good momentum and you're able to make some good choices, you might not be ready for that. But PHP is definitely a great option if going away for an extended period of time just doesn't work right now. But it is also a great option for those who are coming out of a residential program and would like to go back into their regular life and step down to a lower level of care, but still have some more structured support.
Well, and then there's also, the step down portion, I think, has been proven that it's brings in the most likelihood for success just because the continued care, right? And you get to experience things on a daily basis, maybe go into these group or individual sessions and talk about that. But there's also the more California, Florida models that are available, right? That do, you can go live in a building or apartment or townhouse, whatever it may be, that is supplied by the facility and then go into class each day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So for a lot of programs, they'll offer a PHP model where you might go fly somewhere and they provide the housing. They're gonna take you from the housing to a treatment program, give you 20 plus hours of treatment a week, but then you go back home. It's less structured in the evening. You might be responsible for your own food. There's not as much of a therapeutic environment that's outside of the actual treatment setting, but you might be in with other folks who are in treatment with you, and then go get bus back over. It definitely allows for some more opportunities to not only have access to your phone, but be able to connect with home, maybe keep up on, say you're in school or you got a job or you got emails that you got to follow up on. It provides more opportunity for that kind of thing.
Ben, talk about, because I think people, when they're listening, they're thinking of their own situation. There will be some of those people. I mean, in your clinical opinion, can you talk about what sets the residential and PHP apart as far as needs clinically?
Unfortunately, insurance companies do have a vote.
Yes, they do.
They have an opinion about what is medically necessary. So the challenge is that they come to us and say, prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Prove that they have to be at a residential level of care and that they need this much supervision or intervention. And there are some people that would opt to check out of home life for 30 plus days and be there, and their insurance companies are going to disagree and say, we're only authorizing that. Clinically, there are some differences. You know, the feedback that Danny mentioned is pretty important. You know, we offer a lot of feedback to our clients. Their peers offer feedback. There's a culture of support that is about help big picture goal, as I call it. I think the challenge of when you get to a lower level of care is that support shifts a little bit. The feedback shifts a little bit. And the time and space to kind of recover from some of those things is just a little bit different. A lot of folks have to kind of look in the mirror and be honest about, can I actually do, you know, let's say I have a therapeutic session or two, and they've asked me to think, process, journal, or read, or do some work outside of that session to help solidify the lessons that were kind of gained. A lot of folks on the outpatient basis don't have the time and ability, or even they can't. Just simply show up and do that kind of work. There are going to be some therapeutic issues, and obviously when it comes to trauma, those kinds of sessions are just going to be different. We mentioned earlier, they have a different kind of wear and tear on our bodies and mind, and those are going to be a little bit different. the good news is that you can go and do trauma work and outpatient. You can go to day treatment and tackle the majority of the issues. But my experience is the majority of the healing doesn't happen in the session. It happens outside. And that's one of the biggest differences between residential and day treatment, is it depends how healthy you get to be and depends what kind of support is around and how much kind of time and repetition you can have with some of these new skills as you digest and manage some of these often very vulnerable and very sensitive issues.
Well, and I think part of it is willingness on the individual base, right? Like, what is somebody willing to do at that point in their life?
Right.
And what are they willing to accomplish? How much time are they willing to put into it? What can they put into it? Like, that's a huge part.
It's a pretty personal question. There are some folks that I talk to and they're just like, I'm not willing to do the homework. Or they have an idea about healing and change that doesn't require them changing in many other areas of their life. They just want one thing to be different. I'm not an expert on change, but we need big change. If change needs to be deep, needs to stay for a while. There needs to be a fundamental shift. And I think that unfortunately some people are kind of referencing the Hollywood sort of ideas, and they think, well, how about I just have a really impactful session a couple of times a week, and that is going to magically transform my marriage or my health or the way I navigate all sorts of things. And that expectation is trouble for them. So the reality is, the willingness, the desire, or the time they can dedicate to really managing this stuff, it definitely matters.
And part of it, I'll use the clinical term, the damage they've done to their bodies and to their lives, right? Like, sure. That's a big thing when you're deciding what to do. Right. How much damage have you caused?
And it's tough to notice. Most of us would prefer to not think about that.
Yeah.
We'd prefer to say, well, I had good reasons for why I yelled or I cheated or I lied or I did whatever I had to do. Usually, if you're in a healthier environment, someone can say, yeah, I used to make that excuse too. And then you're like, okay, maybe I can look a little bit longer in that mirror. Yeah, that isn't always the case. I think another thing that ends up being a pretty big factor is going to be money.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, a lot of folks are in pretty desperate situations, and oftentimes debt and the bills and a lack of planning, a lack of organization, other parts of their life kind of mandate a lot of their decisions. And so they feel like, I gotta just make it through the day. And so I'm going to find the least intrusive level of care, hoping for the maximum, you know, results and change. And sometimes those are incongruent. Sometimes they find some creative solution that's awesome. But a lot of times people end up thinking, I just need to maintain this, you know, I need to spin all the plates a little bit longer and then make some minor adjustments and maybe that'll be enough. And I'm not trying to say that to say there's a right way and wrong way to do it. There's all sorts of scenarios out there, and we're constantly advocating for people to own what is your situation and do the most you can in that situation and own it and love it. And that's great. But I think there are moments where people are not totally owning what their responsibility is, and they're still expecting a lot of other people or situations to magically change for their healing to be different.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a ton of sense. Well, you brought up finances, and I think as we move down the list, I think that this next option for people that want to continue kind of working their 40 hour or plus or less job per week, I mean, this option's probably the most stable and realistic for them. Danny, talk about what IOP is.
So IOP is intensive outpatient, and what that means from the insurance side is a minimum of 9 hours, nine clinical hours a week, and usually one individual session. So someone's going to an outpatient setting, usually in the evening, but not necessarily, and doing 3 hours three times a week. And typically you're going in, you have a group that you're meeting with, you're going and sitting with that group, doing some sessions, having some assignments, and then you're able to continue to either be going to school, to have a job, be able to go home and sleep where you're sleeping at night, but you're getting that support three times a week.
And so it is what, morning or evenings, right?
Yep. Yeah. Typically there's like a day track or my evening track. The evening tracks are definitely more popular because people are wanting to maintain a job.
And there are some telehealth options these days for that one too.
There are a few telehealth options, kind of depending on the state that you're in. States after kind of the, it opened up for everybody during COVID and everyone was able to do telehealth. But since COVID has subsided, certain insurance and certain states have said, we're not going to keep doing IOP over telehealth. But most places you're able to have a telehealth option where you can do it from the comfort of your home.
Yeah, I think that's the huge cultural piece, right? When we're talking about first responders, I think there's, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, a majority of people are a little bit nervous to go into like a brick and mortar.
Sure. They're surrendering a decent level of control, and there's pros and cons to that. But it's interesting to note that as we talk about this spectrum of care, a residential level of care is other folks are very responsible and are partners with you in kind of developing this plan and helping you get healthy. As we go down to PHP and even IOP, the challenge is that the responsibility on the person gets higher and higher for them to show up, step up, be honest, be truthful, and to kind of advocate for themselves at a much higher level.
Yeah, that's and that's why it's recommended for a step down.
Yeah.
As you start with that huge, you know, responsibility piece and then kind of step down as, I mean, what's the length of this?
Anywhere from a month, sometimes up to 6 months. I think the biggest determinant is it internal motivation or external motivation? I think for a lot of people, when they get to a certain point, there's not a ton of internal motivation. They know they need help and they would like to hand off that that motivation to somebody else. So going into a treatment center where those variables can be managed, well, they develop some internal motivation. For PHP and especially IOP for it be successful, you got to have a real level of internal motivation. You got to be making sure that you're showing up, that you're doing the assignments, that you're trying to get something out of the group. For those people who start to recognize that things are starting to go sideways for me, but the wheels haven't come off yet, going into an IOP program before those wheels come off is awesome. People don't always have that level of awareness where they can say, hey, I need a little bit of help right now. Let me go get a little bit of support and be able to get in there. And those are great for somebody in that situation. But most often it is people who have gone to a higher level of care and now are stepping down and they're developing some of their own internal motivation. They got a good trajectory and some good motivation already that they want to just continue.
Yeah. Yeah. I think IOP is a great option. If that's one that people don't really hear a ton about, right? Like they kind of think either residential, going off site and spending all your time, you know, doing something. Now that's the one I recommend, right? It's a residential or PHP. And then step down to IOP. But for those that are unable to do so, IOP, all of these are great options.
Well, I want to advocate for families for a second, because I think that when families look at this decision-making process, they've got some thoughts and fears as well. In some scenarios, family, as you're listening to this and if you're considering getting some kind of support, some family would say, get the hell out of here. I don't want you around here for a while. Go get this stuff kind of figured out because I'm tired, overwhelmed, whatever it might be. So family oftentimes will say, go take a bigger chunk of time and energy and go and resolve this as much as you can. And there might be a mixture of expectations in there. But a lot of times they want you to do the maximum that you can. And it feels like a pretty worthwhile investment. There are some families as well, and they've all got their reasons for believing this. There's not like a right or wrong to it, that would say, hey, I don't want you to leave and I need you here. And some people make decisions about IOP or PHP or residential on the needs of their family. And it's tough if you don't have a larger kind of map of what you're doing in terms of getting healthy. All of these levels feel incredibly intrusive and a massive burden. There are some people that start doing 9 hours a week after they're already struggling at home, and that feels like a massive pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
And if their heart is not into it and they don't understand what the value is, the reality is they don't stay, they don't do it for very long because it feels like I need you at home, help me manage the kids, help me manage whatever it might be. And this is not working fast enough. And so they end up kind of burning out and not completing that level of care. So there's some folks that we interact with as a residential level that have attempted a lower level, but the time, the situation, the perspective the family had at that point, it felt like it was a burden, and it overall just left kind of a sour taste in their mouth, and they decided to not continuing to do that.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
And then later on, the problems themselves at their core continue to evolve and continue to metastasize and be really a challenge. And so they eventually later on will probably have to look at a residential of care because the issues just didn't magically get better.
Yeah, and I think it's just because one didn't work, whether it's residential,
right,
PHP.
Wrong time, right? Yeah. Wrong whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I would say don't just stop.
Right.
That's probably one of the most important things, is speaking from somebody who did 7 residentials and multiple things. Don't stop, right?
Yeah.
That's a majority of it. And no, you guys have been super helpful. Is there any imparting words when it comes to this? This is more of a knowledge-based podcast than anything else. I think we get on hot topics, but I think we've noticed that a majority of people just don't understand the difference. And we want to try and inform them.
Yeah. No, I think the encouragement and the hope that there is a level of care that you can do. You're going to have to be the one driving that, though. Your friends, your family, your department, no one's going to have the perfect solution or interventions that are going to help pull you out of this. I think that piece of ownership is invaluable. That being said, though, you can start today. There are some quality things you can do today. Again, whether it's books or whether it's speaking up, whether it's talking to peer support or getting honest with a spouse and saying, you know what, I need some extra eyes on this. I'm not sure. I'm overwhelmed. There's lots of ways you can get out of the grind of just spiraling down into this funk. So as we talk about these levels of care, the reality is that there's good everywhere. And if you really invest and try to dive into it, you're going to get something good. But your heart's got to be in it. You got to be focused on it, and you need to treat it like it is a priority. But the good news is there's lots of things you can do to get in a different spot.
Yeah, I think if you have a sense that something needs to change and I could use some help, bare minimum, go get a therapist. Get somebody who you can start to talk to, you can start to bounce some ideas off of, you can get some feedback and some perspective, and they can help you navigate that a little bit. But if you have that sense, act on it. And at a certain point, if you feel like you need more, there's lots of resources out there to be able to help you figure out what that right level, that higher level would be for you.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. I know you're busy men, so I appreciate you taking the time and jumping on with us.
Great. Thanks for your time. Good luck to everybody out there.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.